Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conservationist Conversationalist. I am Brandon, and you're here with...
Aiden Wood.
How's it going, Aiden?
It's going.
It's been a... January is over. It's officially February now.
It's officially, like, real debate season. There's going to be three debates this month. Are you excited?
I am so the opposite of excited. I know this is going to be... I mean, we know what's going to happen, right? There's been a launch of attacks against Bernie from Hillary alone because he's now leading polls and there is a ton of scrambling being done.
So for listeners who might not be aware, Hillary Clinton, who is not in this presidential race, who lost the last presidential race, or at least like lost the Electoral College and therefore the presidency, has been doing interviews and like releasing like a new documentary and like being very critical of Sanders, of Bernie Sanders, like highly critical and basically saying that like Bernie Sanders is divisive. He's dividing the party. Very, very hypocritical in my opinion. Like if you're like why are you criticizing somebody for like having supporters who are attacking other candidates when you're attacking a candidate in the race? Like
Right. Often.
And like, I know this is like dumb, like the dumb liberal part of my brain is like, what does she gain from this? Like, I know my leftist friends would be yelling at me like, because establishment.
Well, I mean, that is kind of, you know, right now, I'm sure that is, you know, the thing, because she's not the only one. She's just the one that the DNC realizes is people are going to listen to people who are a fan of establishment.
Really? I mean, like some people are like, I know that like. My younger brother, who campaigned for Hillary Clinton in 2016 and is, like, very anti-Bernie Sanders, says he's would basically be okay voting for almost anybody in the Democratic primary besides Bernie Sanders, was very receptive to Hillary Clinton's messages. My mom and my stepmom are both some of the people who were under the impression that, like, Bernie Sanders ran as an independent against Hillary after losing the nomination.
Right.
Which is something that I've heard from a lot of, like, middle-aged white women. Like, and I don't know where this comes from. Why does everybody think that Bernie Sanders ran against Hillary Clinton? Like, did you see his name on the ballot? No.
No, in fact, when you look at the numbers, he actually went to 30, I believe it was 38 campaigns where he actually...
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, where he actually...
I think it might have been 36, I don't know.
Yeah, it's in the 30s. Campaigned for her, whereas with Obama, she only campaigned 13 times for Obama when Obama had got the nomination. And so Bernie was never running against her. Yeah, I've admitted on the show, and I know a few people, but actually... very few who actually wrote in Bernie, and yes, I was one of those people. But
which is by the way, like it's like one of those things. Like if you said that in public, if we were together in public, and you said that out loud, I'd be like, I'm not with him. I don't know this guy.
No, I mean the truth is, and I actually don't feel bad about it in the sense of just that now it's like one, I live in a state where I don't have to worry, but two, it's so annoying what we're seeing right now and what the establishment is doing right now, because then you also have Bloomberg, who really isn't what you consider a DNC Democrat in the sense that, you know, he just kind of does his own thing. He's fully funded by himself, but he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing a bit here, that he would put as much money as he had to dig up stuff on Bernie Sanders, and that was the goal there. And there's a Peter, I don't know if I can pronounce his last name, Dow, I apologize if I get that wrong, but I believe he worked for the Hillary Clinton campaign, and he said back when he was researching, trying to dig up stuff on Bernie Sanders, he had the hardest time trying to find stuff on Bernie Sanders.
And some of the stuff that's coming out right now, like some of the attacks, like in the 1970s, Bernie Sanders said that the Vietnam War, or like the America's actions during the Vietnam War are nearly as bad as what the Nazis did. And it's like... I mean, like, if that's the best you could do for an attack, like, he's kind of right. Like, we did, like, brutally kill a lot of innocent people.
And we got involved in a war that was absolutely horrendous. I mean, that killed how many Americans, too? I mean, my God, that war went on for years, nearly a decade. The fact that we are offended by that, because there's this, you know, because we have idiots walking around with, you know, back-to-back World War winners, you know, I mean, which is just the epitome of fuckwad. But, that we think that war is a game. That's already just a terrible mindset to have, by the way, because we should be trying to stay away from wars. The stuff they're digging up on Bernie is, and that's the thing, is that was, you know, we do, or at least I do, I've wanted him to be the top candidate. And so now that he's there, I also have to understand that now when we head to these next debates, the attacks are going to be very much full force against Bernie, because now it's no longer Bernie's not going to be an issue. Now suddenly Bernie is the issue, you know, with every single other candidate.
But I would be careful about saying that, like, Bernie is in the lead. Bernie is the front runner. He's, like, there are some polls in some states that show him at, like, 30%. Like, still, like, most eligible voters would not consider him their first choice. Like, the majority of eligible voters aren't going to consider him a first choice. And, again, like, he only has the lead in these polls in a few states. But I feel like I see a lot of people spreading these polls, basically doing a victory lap. And I'm really concerned that people are going to get complacent.
Oh, no, I totally agree with that. We shouldn't get complacent. That being said, that Iowa is a big one. And on top of that, Texas, where he is now, it's within the margin of error. But Texas, he now leads California. There's a good chance that he's very high in the polls there. I think that it comes down to right now is that Warren fell off a bit, and then with Biden, he just cannot. So Bernie's not really, I don't believe. Well, Bernie's benefiting from the fact that his fan base, you know, take or leave whichever ones. I do know that every fan base of a politician that I've found has some real idiots involved in it, including Bernie. And yet Bernie's are the ones who are, they always pick the worst out, as if every single idiot from Twitter that, you know, that loves Bernie is every Bernie supporter, which is just so far from the truth. And every single candidate has, I mean, my God, the Hillary supporters, they will rip you apart and they'll block you because they're cowards. But you know, and that's not all of them, but it is a good percentage of them. And anyways, my point is that, but actually why Bernie is doing well, yes, there was a big reaction to when people went against him. And started to throw mud at him. That being said, Bernie's also doing well because the rest of the pack is doing really bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And Buttigieg is, I mean, he just, that guy needs a lot of time to get experience. And then when you look at Biden can't stop touching people. He pokes people. We all know about his past with women. And I mean, and the dude is just really like, just, he gets so angry, and this, it's funny, it's almost like he starts to get angry, and then he, like, dials it back, realizing, oh, shit, I just went a little too far there, time to roll this back a bit. But then he starts, you know, he grabbed the guy's jacket, on both sides of the jacket, like, I don't know what that was about. It's like, I guess it's an old person thing, but he's, like, I don't get that guy, like.
I mean, I don't know, like, I don't think that Bernie would do that.
I don't see Bernie, yeah, grabbing each, if I saw Bernie grab each side of somebody's jacket when talking, not like just, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I would probably go, Bernie, keep your hands off of these people for crying out loud.
Also, like, if Bernie did that once, the media would lose their fucking shit. Like, can you imagine, like.
Yeah, no, it totally. It would be an absolute. I mean, there are a lot of things that if Bernie did, that there would be an outrage if the other candidates are doing. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting. These debates are going to be crazy. And I believe, if I'm not right, the Iowa caucus happens within these debates, correct?
Oh, yeah, I think so. The Iowa caucus is happening real soon.
Let me look it up here. I believe the Washington primary, which we got changed because. Well, that's a long story. February 3rd. Okay. So actually, it's day after tomorrow. I mean, we're going to be putting this up later in the week. But it's the 3rd. So that's actually before the first debate. So then you'll start to see, it'll be crazy, because then we get the Super Tuesdays every week. And that starts to get me a little stressed out and excited. It's going to be... It's going to be a weird year, especially with the fact that, you know, we've got the impeachment trial going on. Is it just me? And we talked about this last time too, that, you know, I'm really getting tired of politics. But is it just me? I thought I was a political nerd, right? And I understood politics to an extent, obviously not every little thing about them, but I mean, do you watch this trial and go, I knew nothing, you know, because I mean, it just seems like, what do we have any of these things in place for if we can do what has been done by blocking? Like, I get that the Senate is going to vote, right? And that part we can't really change when it comes to the vote of whether to remove him from office or not. But the fact that we can block witnesses, or our party can block witnesses, and I mean, that just seems so bizarre to me. I'm probably missing something in there that somebody will go, well, this is why that can be done. But it just blows my mind, really, to see how much power. We were told there were checks and balances in different branches, right? To keep the president in check, because he's not the almighty ruler like you would have in dictatorships and such. But, like, this feels like that was all kind of a charade, right? Like, the president has a lot of power.
Yeah. And full disclosure, I'm a very, very, very bad political commentator, if I can describe myself as such. I haven't been watching this at an impeachment trial because I'm fucking sick of it.
Oh, no. I totally understand that. I turn out maybe once every other day or so, or I'll watch the recaps and whatever. But no, I mean, it's a little bit, it does get exhausting because when you watch, especially both sides.
And when the House trial was going on, like, I was tuning in almost every day, despite how fucking boring it was. And there were, like, so many people, like, so many commentators saying, like, make sure you, like, stay engaged. Like, the reason this is so boring and repetitive and, like, nothing new happens is because they want you to tune it out. You know, like, they want you to sort of, like, let it happen and, like, not stay vigilant. And I, at the time, I was like, I'm not going to let that happen to me. I'm going to keep watching. I'm going to stay engaged. And then when the Senate trials started, I was like, I can't fucking do this, guys. I'm sorry.
One of the upsides is that the news, like, on your iPhone, right, if you go to the news section, they will show, like, a recap every day, right, so you can read and see what was going on. But I did watch it most of the days last week. And mind you, I'm also having to work, right? So I can only watch so much. There's just some of the weird little things you start to pick up on because it's like being there all day. And some of the, like, I mean, like, the efficiency is crazy to me. Like, the fact that there's, like, can't we just, like, we have the money. Well, I guess, I mean, we're in debt if you really think about it in the country. But, like, isn't there a system where we could literally just have letters, boom, like, or questions, just boom, right there for Chief Justice, Supreme Court Justice, instead of having, like, somebody have to go get the question from the senator and whichever senator is asking, take it down from the audience, bring it to John Roberts, and then he reads it. I mean, there's everything is so slow about it, too, and I realize that that's, like, how it's always been. But, like, even those things, I'm like, couldn't we, like, speed this up with maybe some technology here, you know? But, and that's a small
pick. Or, like,
have
people write down their questions in advance and, like, have, like, one person collected. I mean, like, that's not my primary concern.
No, it's not my primary concern.
I feel like when it comes down to outdated impeachment stuff, like, I think that, like, the real outdated shit is our Constitution.
Oh, yeah. No. You're right there.
One thing I've been telling people that I really believe is that long term, I think that this impeachment is going to benefit the country overall because it really reveals, like, some of the flaws in the system.
Oh, you know?
Like, it's really, like, shining, like, a light on the ways that the system can be exploited by a demagogue, which is what I do believe that Trump is.
Yeah. No, I was talking about with my brother yesterday, actually. I said, we always talk about, you know, that this has been a horrendous presidency, and it has, but you have to always look for the silver lining somewhere, right? I said, and what he's done since day one is stumbled upon it or done it on purpose, whatever. He hasn't done most of it on purpose, some of it maybe. But it is bringing transparency to the masses where they're going, what? Like, what the fuck, you know? And all I meant by the when it comes to efficiency is just that's how much you watch per day, right? So when you watch it, you start to pick up on everything that annoys the living hell out of you about it, and you just imagine
being.
That's what I was just gonna say, yeah.
Room.
Where I
like,
was,
holy
yeah.
Shit.
That's what I was trying to lead into was that I'm going. I mean, like, are they actually paying? Because, like, there are some things that I go, oh my God, there's no way I could be there and just be like, yeah, I'm definitely paying attention to all this. Also, I would have loved it if AOC was a senator and she could have, like, really asked some badass questions like she does.
She would have asked some good questions.
I know. Elizabeth Warren did actually send a letter asking, it was a letter actually about whether John Roberts was inept or not. And he had to read it off, which was kind of a hilarious moment. He definitely did not love reading that question off. But it brought up I was actually reading a story and this brought up an interesting point where they said, even if, you know, your favorite candidate, right, now that they see this power that Trump has almost, brought to the presidency because of what we were just talking about here, will it be something that even a Democrat or a different candidate in the future will think, well, look, I have executive power over all this. I'm going to use it because Trump did. And will they use that in their mind and go, you know what? He did it for bad. I'm doing it for good. So now I'm going to use this power. And what will that do to this country if now it becomes something where there really are nobody's being kept in check? And, you know, regardless of whether it's your favorite candidate or your least favorite, you know, even if it's Bernie, for instance, is there a point where he comes in and goes, I'm doing this for good, you know?
Which I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to do. His entire, like, movement is about, like, building civic engagement, building democracy, which is, okay, so it pisses me the fuck off whenever, like, pundits say, like, oh, Bernie is so Trumpian in, like, the way he, like, talks, because he has, like, all these big ideas and he's, like, a populist movement. But Bernie's, like, it's, like, somehow undemocratic to, like, appeal to the people and to motivate people to be involved in their political process. Like, why is it undemocratic to encourage community and civic engagement among the population? Like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, no, it's so true. And it's like they take this, like, oh, well, he has, you know, he has all these fanatical anti-establishment followers. Boom, Trump. They did the same thing to AOC, you know. And at the end of the day, when you look at what Trump did was Trump decided, I want to run for president. There was this thought in his head that, like, what could I put on my resume and what could make me more powerful? I could be president, right? And he then latched on to all these things that either he had, like, residing inside of him, hatred toward ethnic minorities, wanting to, you know, cozy up with the rich, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Go down the list. And then he decided, this is what I'm running on because I can really rally the evangelical troops and I can rally the anti-immigration troops.
I mean, honestly, I think that he just, like, got on stage and started saying random shit, and whatever got an applause, he kept saying.
When they cheered, yes, absolutely. And whereas Bernie has been about this, you know, like you mentioned, all these things that he cares so much about, this is years and years of Bernie Sanders. You go back, I mean, even, like, I totally agree that people can change, right? So when people bring up that Warren was a Republican in the 90s, or that Hillary Clinton was against gay marriage and Obama was against gay marriage in the 90s, early 2000s, whatever it was, you know, that yes, people can change. I don't deny that. But you do have a candidate like Bernie where that was him from the time he was a college student, you know?
Yeah, and his entire life has been, like, about organizing people.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, after 2016, like, they founded Our Revolution, like, motivated at getting people elected, like, to positions of power. Like, part of what the Bernie campaign does is, like, go into neighborhoods and, like, teach people how to organize, how to use, like, the technology that's relevant to organizing, to even giving seminars in, like, Spanish language to motivate, like, Latino communities.
Yeah.
And then, like, his entire, like, campaign is, like, hashtag not me, us, you know? Yeah. It's just...
I think people are actually, like, a lot of the, like, establishment voters, they're offended by that for some reason. It's just that, which is crazy. That's, like, that's supposed to be
I think that because, like, they think that they hear, like, not me, us, and they think that somehow he's not, like, authentic, or he's, like, trying to tap into a populist sentiment to get himself elected, like, instead of, like, really, like, actively focusing on fostering, like, healthy civic engagement and democracy, like, which is strange. But, like, when the New York Times, like, published their endorsement and they were, like, critical of, like, Bernie for, like, his rhetoric, and, like, how, like almost, like, Trumpian it is, and then, like, which is, like they're both populist, which is one thing, but then, like, to say that you're, like, don't want an authoritarian or you don't want, like, an ego in power, but then, like, to praise people, like, I mean, like, Warren, like, similar policies to Bernie, but she's selling it as Warren has a plan for that, you know? Like, Warren's, like, in charge, like, Warren's got you. Like, for Hillary Clinton, it was, like, we're ready for Hillary. Like, it's her time. You know, it's about, like, them as people, and it's not about the... it's not about the community that they represent.
There's a huge reason to, and a huge portion of this that they're missing when they call both Trump and Sanders populist. The reason why they're populist is because they are appealing to a major section of this country, that being the middle class and the iron belt and the workers of this country, that somehow in politics people just forget about. And whereas...
Well, they forget about unless they have to do, like, a fun speech about, like, the industrial Midwest.
Yeah,
like.
But, I mean, you know, Trump appealed to those people. Now, he never really... He hasn't done anything for them, okay? I know a lot of people with their tax breaks that they thought were going to be great are now, like, Trump fucked me over, actually, you know? But with Bernie, you know, this is somebody who is, I remember growing up in a, you know, my dad was union, and we were a middle class, you know, we're not talking high-end middle class. We're talking we felt we were middle class. Probably some people would have said we were not middle class. And but, you know, but it was a work blue-collar family, right? And the one thing that I never really felt from any of the candidates when I started to get involved in politics was that anybody really, like you mentioned, they have their fun little speeches sometimes, but nobody ever really was campaigning for the everyday worker. And Bernie's the one you hear talking about the retail workers, the construction workers, the truckers, the go down the list of everyday type of work, not just the, oh yeah, you know, you're the this or that, you know, the you work at a you know, we'll take construction for instance, where that's like the one that everybody will bring up, right? Because that's the old blue collar job, or mining is another one that people will bring up, you know, that kind of thing. You know, they'll bring that up when they're at a stop where they're farming. There we go, too. At a stop that matters. Whereas you always hear about, oh, what if the farmers lose money? Or what if the refinery workers lose money? Or what if the, this or that loses money? Now, when you hear Bernie Sanders, he's talking about, no, everybody is having trouble making enough money. He mentions the retail workers. You never hear people go, oh my God, there are massive layoffs by Barnes and Nobles. You know, mm-hmm. But people, that's their jobs. It's people's livelihoods who work at those mm-hmm. places. And nobody goes, oh gosh, what happens now? We need to bring books back to the forefront because people are losing their jobs over this. Everyday workers.
Yeah, because a lot of those workers are non-unionized. Like, absolutely. When they're campaigning for like plumbers or like iron workers, like they're campaigning for the union endorsement,
yeah.
Not necessarily like for like better like conditions for the people themselves.
Yeah, I know. It's and so I just, gosh, I just hope that things, I hope 2020.
And that's like also like what you said earlier about how like Bernie talks about like how everyone is struggling, like Americans are struggling, and not pitting like workers against each yeah. other, like not like appealing to like steel workers because they're steel workers, but like appealing to steel workers because they're like Americans who are in a position of hardship. And like what Bernie is doing is building class consciousness, yeah. like building mm-hmm. like a level of empathy and solidarity between people in very different parts of the country in very different occupations.
Absolutely. Nurses support Bernie Sanders. Postal workers now. They're the Postal Workers Union.
It's funny that you mentioned that. Actually, like on my way back to my apartment after work today, I ran into the postal worker that delivers our mail. And we like got to chatting because like he and I have like a casual relationship. He just published a book of poetry. Mm-hmm. It's called let me like look it up. I told him I would look it up as soon as I got home, but then I took a nap. it's called okay, so the book is by David Mondragon. He's the postal worker. And the book is called Poems That Rhyme From My Heart, From the End to the Start.
The nice. Little subtitle. Nice.
Yeah, and like he told me that and he like got all giggly. He was like, I made the title rhyme. He's like such a sweetheart. but like a few months ago, like when I was like off to deliver I was like putting my crossword puzzle submission for the New York Times, which did get rejected. But when I was putting it in the mail, he was there like as I was putting it in the outgoing mail and I was like telling him about my puzzle. And then he told me that like, I'm working on this book of poetry. anyway, so today I like ran into him and he told me about his book of poetry and like we got to talking and I told him that I was like canvassing for a local political candidate. And then I pointed at my apartment where I have like a sign for the candidate that I'm working for, who I don't want to say on this platform.
Right.
But I like pointed at the sign and said like, yeah, I'm working for that guy. And like he turns and he sees the sign and then he's like, cool. And then he sees my Bernie Sanders sign and he's like, oh, you support Bernie? Like I like love Bernie. I'm not supposed to say that like while I'm on the job since I'm a government worker. But yeah, like Bernie's like my man.
No, that's great.
I probably shouldn't have like shared the name of his poetry collection and then like.
It's okay.
His endorsement, which he's not supposed to say on the job. It was off the clock. Like, guys, I did not run into him as he was dropping off my mail. He was not in uniform. He was, you know, I just ran into him, like, at the store. Yes. And he told me about his poetry. And he just coincidentally happens to be a postal worker.
Well, you know, we have all these different unions that are now supporting Bernie. We've got everyday people who, I mean, you know, you look at the guy who's running for, I just know him as Joshua the Truck, right? I forget his last name. But that's his Twitter handle. You know, he's a Bernie Sanders fan, and there's,
it's Josh, I think, Josh the Trucker.
Yeah. And so, you know, yeah, I just really hope that we just keep carrying steam. And like you said, too, don't get complacent. That's a very, very, that could be a very bad thing. But I just don't see that happening with Bernie supporters. Although I, you know, we are.
I don't know. Like, the thing is, like we're all like humans. We all like are subject to psychology, like the way that these things work on us, psychologically speaking, like Bernie supporters don't have any unique quality that makes them more motivated. I think that there's just higher stakes for this election, and maybe his team's gotten better at motivating people. But I think that we're all subject to the same sort of, oh, like, he's leading in the polls. Like, he's at 30%, which means, like, 70% of eligible voters in California aren't voting for him in the primary. He's not their first choice. But, like, eh. And right. It's just, we need to, like, we need to really be on this.
Yeah, but it does remind, I mean, I remember back when Obama, when he, right as we got to about this time, in fact, really, actually, he was a little bit later, as after the Iowa caucus, and was closer as we started, you started to see he was picking up steam. But you, when it came to the Washington primary, which I believe is usually, or at that point, was a Washington caucus, in March, you started to see, well, Obama is going to probably take this over Hillary, you know, and he did continue to gather that scene. I think that as long as there's, I mean, Hillary probably actually, we complain about what she's doing, she might be actually doing the best thing for Bernie, because the way that Bernie supporters react to that sort of, you know, those sort of takes on Bernie is by donating money and going crazy on social media.
People fucking hate Hillary Clinton. She's at her like lowest, she has her lowest approval rating in like forever. She's at like approximately 30% approval rating.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people who were really disappointed, like, who, like held their nose when they voted for her in 2016.
Yeah, so that's going to, but yeah, we have this, this is officially, this month is the three debates. It's going to be a very kind of a clarity moment, right? As we start to move along through February, we're going to start to realize what might be happening. And then, by the way, now Trump, again, we talked about this a little bit last time, but now it's actually been really talked about. Trump says he might not even have debates. He doesn't want to necessarily have debates, which will be very interesting, because I don't know if that benefits him, if it doesn't. I suppose either way, because his fans are going to say, yeah, Trump shouldn't have to debate these people. They're just the fake news. It's going to, you know, whatever. And yet if he debates somebody, they're going to also say that he beat them, right? I do believe that everybody should have to debate, just because as voters, we should be informed.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's people who, like, think that, like, Trump doesn't have authoritarian tendencies or isn't, like, an authoritarian personality. Like,
right, and then he says stuff like this. Yeah, yeah, no, it's... But I mean, but that very, I would say right now, like if this was last year, I would have said he can say that all he wants, but he's going to have to be in the debate. And now I realize, no, he could probably say I'm not going to debate and nobody would give two shits, you know, or at least.
Yeah. I mean, like he can say like, no, like we don't want to have any witnesses testify. Yeah. Like we're not going to comply with any subpoenas, like in blatant violation of the law. Also, I didn't obstruct justice, but that's a completely different story. It's just.
And you know, it's funny too, like Rubio said, you know, a few of these senators said, well, we think he acted not perfectly. What does that fucking mean, by the way?
We had some more evidence, maybe if we like were able to get documents and witnesses, we could like determine whether or not he did like not act perfectly. Like, it's almost like you guys don't care about finding out the truth. You've just made up your minds. And like, I just like, it's just like if Bernie Sanders like came under an impeachment investigation, I wholly believe that like they would completely comply, and like if he's innocent, then he's innocent.
I would
and
want
not,
him to comply.
Like,
I mean, we have that. Yes. We have these for a reason. I would want even you know they have those things that they post on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You know, who you think, you know, they show like the image of God and they say how you feel about your candidate. No, I don't feel Bernie is God. I don't feel that. I think that Bernie is somebody who represents a good portion of us, and I really at least want to see what he can do, because he has fought for this sort of thing for a long time. And on top of that, although the Senate is going to be still hard to get through, as well as Congress for that matter, he does have a lot of experience working in that, because he's been a senator for how long. And so, but I do not see Bernie Sanders as God, and I didn't see Obama as God when I was, caucusing for Obama. And so that's another issue that comes up, where they go, oh, if this was your candidate, you'd be totally okay with it. No, I wouldn't. I would not be okay. I don't want to live in an autocracy. I don't like the idea of a dictator who can just, I was brought up on that there was checks and balances. That's what I was taught. I was taught that there are three branches, that you have all these branches of the government, and to keep the president in check and to make sure that we don't have somebody who abuses their power. And now this is just proof that that's all fucking bullshit. And so, if it was Bernie and Bernie was impeached for whatever reason, I would say, please, please bring the witnesses in, because if you are guilty of something, you're fucking guilty of something. That being said, Iran supposedly, I don't know all the details, but something maybe in the future to keep an eye on. Iran supposedly does have a pretty good case, they're saying, stronger than anybody would think, for war crimes with Trump. And that'll be interesting to see how that changes things down the road, whether he's president or not.
I don't think it's going to change fucking shit.
Well, I mean, you do end up getting the UN involved, right? Which does bring things to a different level. I think what changes things is if he's not president anymore. Let's say he loses in November.
But what's the UN going to do? Like, let's be real.
Send him to the Hague. That's what I want to see.
Trump's just going to be like, no.
He's going to be like, no, nope. I'm not going to go to jail? Well, shit.
No, I'm not going to go to jail. Like,
God, if only we all had that. So that's basically politics. I want to touch on this a bit as well. So obviously something that's been really polarizing in the news, that happened was the helicopter crash and the death of Kobe Bryant, which is interesting because, I have some really interesting thoughts on it, but basically to give a little bit of a, kind of an overview. So, everybody's heard this story, but it was in a helicopter crash with, I believe, was it nine? Is it eight or nine people? I think eight, and then the pilot. So nine people, and
including his daughter.
Yeah, his daughter Gianna, and
young daughter.
Right, a 13-year-old daughter, and for me, when I was a kid, I had Kobe Bryant posters on the wall. I had, that's what you grew up in that time, and Kobe was an exceptional basketball player. But you go away from the basketball side of things. And so when I woke up to that news, when it happened, I was shocked, right? Because he's 41 years old, and that's only 8 years older than me. I was a kid with his posters, and I was, because he started playing at like 17, so I was like still young when he started playing basketball. But still only 8 years older than me. And you see and you hear his daughter's in the helicopter, and you hear the name Kobe Bryant. You toss a paper into the into trash can.
What's interesting is that, like, even I mean, like, I've spoken many times on the show before about how I'm like not into sports. I don't know fucking anything about sports, but I do that. Like, when I wear something, I always shout Kobe. Like, and it was wild because, like, I was out canvassing the day that the crash happened, and I got like a little news alert on my phone saying that there was a helicopter crash in Los Angeles and there are people who are dead. And I was like, well, that fucking sucks, but like, it's like I like didn't stand out like amidst the other like barrage of like news reports about shitty things happening all over the world. So I was like, well, fuck. And then I just like kept canvassing. And then I got like a few minutes later, I got like a news alert saying like Kobe Bryant among the dead. And I like stopped, and it floored me. Because even as somebody who has no relation to sports, I have never watched Kobe Bryant play basketball. Maybe if I was watching like if a commercial for a basketball Lakers thing came on and there was like a little shot of him like shooting or something, like I would like see it. But like I never like watched it, but like, it's just so saturated in our culture of consciousness that, like, it was still really, like, shocking.
Yeah, Mamba mentality, too. If you're into sports, that's a huge thing, because once he came back from what we're going to get into in a few minutes here, that was in his new personality, was the Mamba mentality, right? Which was he was kind of a take no prisoners, train, 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 the whole, the sports guy thing, right? You know, pain is just trying to get you to stop, but you push through the pain, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. I think what's interesting is, so when I heard about it, because obviously, you know, on my side, it's a little different. I'm a huge sports fan, right? So, of course, mm-hmm. there was a sadness, right? Because you go, oh, my God, Kobe Bryant's dead. What the hell? And then you remember, because I remember being, you know, 17, 18, whatever I was, when you had what happened in Colorado. And I thought, I need to go back and read this. Not because we should ever speak ill of the dead, not because we wanted to slam on Kobe after he died, but because I saw hundreds of people who were very much champions of the Me Too movement and very much calling out people for what they are, and they were mourning Kobe. Now, I don't have a problem with that, by the way, about mourning somebody. You can mourn somebody who is not always a good person. That's life. It's very complicated how, you know, mourning is complex. But I thought, you know, I remember thinking to myself when I was talking to my mom about it, I told her, I said, you know, I said, if I remember right, like, there was nothing that came out of that, you know, that allegation. I think they said the girl was crazy and it was all swept under the rug. Nothing. There was, you know, it was more just in trying to get money or whatever. And I thought, you know what? I got to go back and read this, because that was years ago. And we all know what defense teams do. And we all know how things can look a certain way. You know, basically until you actually really dive deep. And so I read I went back and I read the article. I read her statements and I read his responses to them. And I read about how the defense team basically did the worst case of victim blaming, you know, not the worst case, but a really poor case of victim blaming when it comes down to it. And this was a girl who came from a wealthy family. He's only 19. Now, mind you, he was only like 23, 24, whatever it was at the time. But she wasn't looking for money. She came from a wealthy family. They actually owned, I believe, or part of her family owned the hotel she worked at. And when you read about it, this is someone who was trying to be very cordial to a guest at the hotel, a big name guest. She was told it was Kobe Bryant. And where he that night decided to take advantage of her. And, you know, somebody who was caught in the headlights, deer in the headlights, right? When it was all found out, they said, well, you know, when he was asked, well, she was attractive, right? So, you know, you wanted to, you know, you thought she was attractive. And he's like, oh, she wasn't that attractive. And then said things like, you know, I should have done what Shaq did, which is buy her a car or something and to basically shut her up. And then finally, weeks later, when maybe because, yes, everybody, even the worst of us, have conscience, or at least you'd hope most of us do, maybe it caught up with him. And suddenly he came out with a statement saying, I felt it was consensual, but she didn't. And now this is only my opinion. I can see that she maybe how she wouldn't have is what he said. Now, I can understand how this is just a personal opinion of mine. But to me, that sort of translates as I feel really bad about what I did, but I raped this girl. And again, that's just my opinion, but saying I thought it was consensual, but I can see where she wouldn't. Come on. Like, what do you mean you can see where she wouldn't? If you just now can see where she wouldn't, then during that time, there had to be something in your brain that said this is not, I mean, he was choking her, you know, and said that his other mistress liked that. And again,
yeah, well, I had gotten into a huge argument with somebody on a political round, or not even, it wasn't a political roundtable, it was just a streamer roundtable, where like the discussion was like how like women like biologically evolved to like choking because like in like olden times, like they would be kidnapped. And so like it was like a bunch of like, like bullshit. And I was like, okay, first of all, like a lot of women don't like choking just because something sort of saturated in like the public understanding of what normal sex is doesn't mean that it's something that everybody likes. Like, there's plenty of people who are, like, asexual or lesbians who are, like, not even into sex with men at all. And you're going to, like, say that, like,
just normal
women have,
people.
Like, a natural desire to be choked, like, by men because of, like, evolution for some reason. It was, like, ridiculous. But, like, I was saying, like, why are people incapable of, like, just asking, hey, can I choke you? Are you into that?
Right.
Like, if I was, like doing a hookup with somebody, like, like, what am I saying? If I was hooking up with somebody, and they started choking me without, like, asking me, like, I would freak the fuck out. Like, I would, like, start crying. Because, like, that's not something at all. I've never been into that. And it's always, like, any sort of, like, any sort of thing that, like, limit, like, could potentially, like, limit my access to breath, like, breathing, right. Like, is always super, super, super stressful for me.
Right. And, yeah, and that's exactly what you're saying, too. That's why, you know, of course, I'm not trying to kink shame people, right? If people like that kind of thing, that is, but like you said, there has to be some form of consent and asking about that sort of thing. In his case, you know, of course, to clarify, he was not violently choking her, according to the reports. It was sexually, right? So he was not, like, cutting off her breath, but she did not consent to it. Obviously, she didn't consent to any of it. But you know, but made the dumbass comment that, well, my other mistress likes it, so I just figured she liked it, and that was part of it. I mean, by the way, that's just a communication, right? A whole nother discussion. But, you know, but as not to drag this on, again, I don't want this to seem like I actually felt sadness when I saw that Kobe died. I'm not trying to, one, drag his name through the mud now that he's dead, and two, I'm not trying to say people who are mourning him are wrong to mourn him. What I am saying is that what I saw were people who were calling him a hero. What I heard from Shaquille O'Neal was he's a family man like me. I heard these things about, not about his, how he was a legend playing basketball, not how he was a flawed man who tried to do good after he made a huge mistake and ruined somebody's life, because he did ruin her life. He took a part of her she'll never get back. And I didn't hear that. I didn't hear, but you know what? Kobe became this, you know, guy who was a champion of women's sports. When he had the slip up using the F word about, you know, the gay slur toward a referee, instead of doubling down and saying, oh, that's just something that happens, he went through GLAAD and he learned, and he started to become someone who tried to get other players not to. So this was a guy who learned and tried to make things a better play. I get that, and that's okay. But you can mourn the man as he is. You can't mourn him as a god that you've now created because you met him once and you liked him. That, or he was your favorite basketball player. And I saw so many people, both male and female, who were champions of the Me Too movement, who were pissed off at this one reporter who got fired because she shared the account. They have said,
I think she's been reinstated since then, but it was a Washington Post reporter who shared, it wasn't even a Washington Post story, no. It wasn't a story that she had
written. She was a survivor,
she shared another news article about, like, the sexual assault incident, and, like, because of that, like, she got a ton of harassment, death threat, people sharing her address. She had to move into a motel, and she went and tried to talk to her managers about that and was like, I feel really unsafe, and her managers were like, you should delete the tweets, like, how dare you, like, tweet this, like, this is, like, looks badly on, like, the Washington Post. It was infuriating.
Yeah, because she was a survivor herself. And and so many survivors are being shot down over Twitter by both men and women. And it was so disappointing for me to see, because anybody who's gone through any sort of traumatic thing like that, how on earth you can not, at the very least, be understanding and open-eared to these people who, I don't care if you're really devastated, that you're on social media. If you don't want to see both sides, then stay off of social media that day. But these are people who are watching a man who they see as their rapist, right? As their, because that's coming into their minds, that the trauma's coming back, and they're seeing what in their mind is a rapist, regardless of what you feel he is or not. And they're seeing him touted now as a hero or even a god of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that doesn't frustrate and absolutely hurt somebody, I don't know what's wrong with you, because that brings everything up to the surface. And of course, they're going to be frustrated. They're dealing with years of trauma, something that will never leave them. And the dead don't feel anything. They're dead.
The only thing is, like, I can, like, when I was, like, reading through all these posts, again, like, I had no real personal connection to, like, Kobe Bryant. I didn't know, like, his family story. Like, I wasn't, like, attached to that at all. But I did, like, feel, like, simultaneously, like, I felt, like, all this empathy for, like, sexual assault victims, especially, like, the person that, like, was, like, Kobe Bryant assaulted, like, for, like, seeing all of this stuff and how, like, difficult that must be personally. But then I also felt, like, simultaneous conflicting empathy for, like, Vanessa Bryant
but
and,
that's
like,
totally under,
their
but
daughters.
That makes you a good
because,
person.
Like,
huh? That makes you a good person, though.
Yeah, but, like, I was, like, how, like, shitty it must be, like, to see, like,
oh,
to,
I know.
Like,
I,
go through this grieving process, and then also, like, have the sexual assault stuff brought up, which probably is also really difficult for their family, like, to, like, cope with. And so, like, I had, like, these conflicting things, but then I also felt this, like, third form of empathy for, like, the rape victim herself, who, like, might feel like really terrible or because like a lot of that victim blaming stuff can get into your head, mm-hmm. like psychologically. Like, I wonder like if she was like feeling like regret for like owning her truth and like sharing what had happened to her. Right. Like, honestly, like with the death stuff, like that must be like a really, really, really complicated feeling. And like seeing like the sexual assault story like circulated all over again, plus like all these outpouring of support for your rapist, but then also like he's also like a human being that like just died. Absolutely. And as the survivor, like that must be like so difficult. So like there's like all these like very conflicting feelings.
And then it's a day and age we live in with social media, right? Because that's what I mean. That's 100%. You know what I. When I look at the whole Kobe Bryant situation, again, it's okay to mourn this guy. That's you know, but you have to take him, and that's all that reporter, by the way, was saying. You have to take him mm-hmm. for the man he was, 100%. Whether mm-hmm. you feel that what he did, you know, why is I kind of looked at it as take somebody like Harvey Weinstein or somebody like that, right? For instance, now they have families too. Now, guy's a scuzz. I don't think anybody here is going to go, oh God, we're going to be sitting here crying if, you know, one day when, you know, however many years down the road it is, when Harvey kicks it. But, you know, but he does have family. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to say, ding dong, the witch is dead. They're going to say, bury him 6 feet more because we don't want him, any chance of him coming back out. But he's going to have family who are going to see that. And there are people who are going to know that their family member was not a good man. But that he was also their family member and they might have loved him.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately one of those things that happens. And, you know, again, I feel really terrible, too, for the fact that, you know, what I was thinking of during it was I love my family. Can you imagine those sisters at home? Right. Mm-hmm. You know, they've lost their father and their sister. That's just horrendous. Vanessa, for instance, who she got, talk about somebody who has been also dragged through shit. She was dragged through the court, you know, the allegations, the case, probably trying to figure out, you know, I can only imagine what was going through her mind. Then sees that her wants to make it work with her husband. They have, you know, he becomes a, whether you, and I totally understand anybody who says, hey, you can't repent from that. I'm willing to listen to anybody. But she sees a man in her eyes that became a good man. Because in all truth, if you take that blip off of the whole thing, Kobe was a good guy, right? But it's a big blip. But, you know, but she saw that. And all I can say, I'm going to, you know, give her the benefit of the doubt that as a wife, she was going, this man is a good man. So she's lost her daughter and her husband. And, you know, but it's just interesting for me because it's a culture, a cancel culture, as they call it, right? Who, you know, Aziz Ansari had an awkward, dumbass sexual encounter. And the dude hasn't been heard from since, essentially. I know he's been on a few things or whatever. But
I think that's mostly because like he's not that funny.
I find Aziz funny, amazingly. So I
whenever I watch anything that Aziz Ansari is in, whether it's like Stand Up or like his like Netflix show that I don't even remember the name of, like I watched several episodes of that because like I was with some friends and they wanted to watch it, and I don't think I laughed once.
See,
like yeah. I didn't even think he was funny. Actually, I didn't think Parks and Rec was very funny.
Oh my god,
I know that makes me like
okay. That's a discussion we have a different day because I love Parks and Rec.
The thing is like I think that maybe like it's because. Like a lot of the jokes from Parks and Rec I had seen like in memes and stuff for like years before I watched it, so there was no like shock value to it. Like almost every moment from the show was like clipped and shared and memed a bajillion times.
That being
so maybe that had something to do with
that being said though, my point was not about Aziz so much as several of the people during that, you know, where there was a lot of things brought out during that time, right? And there was they call it cancel culture. I'm getting so tired of that. But you know, they get it, but that they call it that. And a lot of those people, in some ways deservingly, haven't really recovered from it. And maybe in other ways you go, well, is that, we don't know. You know, that's all personal, that's subjective. But, you know, I saw so many of those things happen. And then I saw, you know, all these different athletes, you know, even Megan Rapinoe, who has been such a champion for women's rights and who just seemed to like just shove everything aside. And again, mourning is one thing, but they started to make him out to be something that he wasn't. And which, like I said, the hero word, that really got me. And I saw some people who I even know who were hurt by it. They were hurt by the reaction because they had been raped. They had been sexually assaulted and they were confused. Why is this happening now? And, you know, why is, what exactly has gone on? And I guess I just, you know, again, at the end of the day, mourning and death is a very complex subject. But, you know, I saw a lot of hatred towards survivors, and they're the ones feeling shit. This is not meant to be harsh, but Kobe's gone. He's not seeing any of these social media posts. I know his family is not. I do feel terrible for them. I really do. I feel terrible for the other families who are on board. But at least be easy on these people who are survivors, and they are hurting, you know, when they see this happen. But otherwise, Aiden, so you hate Parks and Rec. No,
I like some parts of Parks and Rec, and I watched like 5 seasons of it. I didn't watch like the 6th extra season, but like I watched like 5 seasons of it, and I watched it basically entirely with a straight face.
Oh my god, I can't believe that. Are you not an Office
but
fan?
But I kept watching it because it was like Netflix was like, do you want to watch the next episode? And I was like, sure, whatever. Like, I was just so depressed. I was like, I don't give a fuck. Maybe I was just too depressed to like enjoy comedy at that time.
I understand you there. Are you an Office fan then? No. Oh, see, there you go. Wow. So that's.
I just don't like cringe comedy. It just makes my skin crawl, especially when it's like secondhand embarrassment and like awkwardness.
So what comedy what would you say makes you laugh?
I tend to like sort of like absurdist comedy, but especially like absurdist comedy that isn't like shock value, like bodily humor. Like I prefer stuff that's like kind of wholesome, but like also like sort of out there and like it's sort of unexpected. It sort of like shocks you in, it's not shocks you, but not shocks in like a crude manner, but like in a subverting your expectations kind of manner.
Okay, that's understandable. Now, so what else do we have going on? I there was another subject I wanted to touch on, and for some reason, I just can't remember what it was. But we are nearing an hour, and you, of course, have to edit this, so... I will say that we're going to have a lot to talk about later on this month.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and you, I mean, gosh, you're in the thick of it. You're canvassing for... So you're like, you're really getting the political deluge right now.
Yep. Well, yep. We're going to have the debates, and then I'm doing canvassing, and then I'm streaming almost most days. I'm doing like some form of either like doing my own stream or going on another roundtable. So I'm like inundated with politics constantly.
And you're doing a lot of stuff, by the way, and you do the crossword still as well. People, I plug my podcast, we plug Aiden's podcast, which even though she's kind of on hiatus, you can still go listen to the old episodes, which are great. But she does do a crossword puzzle stream on Twitch. Tell everybody a little bit more about it, because they should go check it out. It's really cool.
Yeah, so actually most of my Twitch stream right now is general politics stuff. I do news, I do debates, I do political theory. I've been reading a lot of, like, anarchist political theory from the 1800s and stuff like that. But I also want to, like, explore a lot of different, like, political ideologies. I'm going to read Ayn Rand at some point, which I fucking hate. I've read Ayn Rand before.
Right, I was going to say, because I know you're not, I can almost guess you're not reading that out of love.
Oh, no. But I think that I need to, like, talk about
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, no,
about
totally.
Its influence, because it was very influential, whether or not it deserved to be. It's not the point. The point is, so I do a lot of politics, and then I also do crossword puzzles every Sunday night. It's a collaborative crossword puzzle, so chat can use, like, the chat can use commands to enter answers directly into the puzzle, and we work on it together. So if you like community, if you like collaboration, if you like word puzzles and word games, definitely check it out. Sunday night, twitch.tv/AIDANWOULD.
And you can also, of course, check out, we have the links to our other podcasts in the description of this podcast. Aiden's is Dibs, Welcome to the Family. Mine, Lemonade Magazine Podcast, Salt Music. We got interviews. Actually, an interview coming up next week, it sort of straddles the line a bit to politics, because this girl who I, or this woman who I interviewed, Janet May, she she plays music at protests. That's basically where she likes to play the music. She's a very much a anti-establishment type, and she's just a fantastic person. I absolutely love talking to her, and she's going to be in Seattle February 17th, actually, at the Crocodile. I don't know where she's going to be in LA, so I'm sorry, or Southern California. But you can check out, of course, her website. But yeah, so if you want to check out Lemonade Magazine Podcast, me and Kara Connolly had a Grammy recap on the last show, and me and Janet May will be discussing politics and music in our next show, and I always play new tracks as well from indie artists and some mainstream stuff every once in a while. And yeah, it's Lemonade Magazine Podcast, so. Well, Aiden, it's good talking to you as always. It's great to discuss the world. even.
Yeah, I actually just realized there was something else that I wanted to talk to you about before we ended the episode. I heard you don't like wind chimes.
Oh, shit, that's right. This was on Twitter.
I posted on Twitter a little tweet that said, I fucking love wind chimes.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't just say you love them, you said. So
I fucking love wind chimes. I've been thinking about, like, my love for wind chimes a lot lately, because I'm doing door-to-door canvassing, and whenever a house has wind chimes, I always gotta tap them, you know? Like, I always gotta, like tap the wind chimes. And if they have, like, 5 wind chimes, I have to go and do every single one, see what they all sound like. Yes, but then your mother commented on my tweet saying, Brandon hates wind chimes. And I said, well, we're going to have a talk about
that. That's right. It was funny. I don't even know how to explain it, except that it always seems to be windy in Western Washington. And so I feel like we had neighbors who always had wind chimes, and you could always hear them, even though their house was like, because you got to realize I grew up on 5 acres in the middle of nowhere. And with this like little matchbox house. But our neighbors were quite a ways away, but you could hear their wind chimes all fucking day long. And you know, a lot of people like it. For me, it's an auditory thing that
Like how some people don't like the hum of electricity and like fans and stuff. Or like some people like don't like bird song. Like if they wake up and hear birds chirping, they get really pissed off.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, I just did like it was a constant all day thing. And some people love it. I just hated everything about it. And mind you, I'm very happy for people who like it, but I it's one of those things where like I was...
Except that when you commented on my tweet, you said that you hate wind chimes so much you don't think you can ever level with people who
like
them. Right,
yes, and I'll stand by that. And the reason why is I don't think that I could like... Because like I understand why people like... Or I don't understand why people like them, but I want people to be able to enjoy them because I like people to be able to enjoy things like that. That being said, I was thinking to myself, like, hypothetically, right? Let's just say I was dating somebody, and they said, I love wind chimes. One day if I have a house, I have to have all the wind chimes, or at least one even. And I'd be like, I don't know if I can live with this person for the rest of my life.
Oh, okay, is it like, all wind chimes? Because some wind chimes are, like, big, and they have, like, a really, like,
clunky
calming,
sound.
Like, low tone. Yeah. But there's some that are, like, smaller and have, like, a high ringing sort of sound. Like, they're sort of, like, big, like... Like low tones.
So here's
are those better?
So here's what I'll say. No, and that brings up. But you brought up a good point. Maybe we're getting somewhere here because here's an interesting part of that. So maybe it's less about the sound and about what it means because
that it's windy.
Yeah, and because as somebody who runs and likes to go on a bike, right? Like I hate when it's windy.
Wind is my favorite weather, especially like windy, slightly rainy
like
weather, or like it's about to rain. Like oh, and you can sort of feel the electricity in the air. Oh, I get so invigorated. It's like the wind has so much energy, and it just gives me its energy as it like goes by.
I have two friends now that said that. I thought that I have the one friend who said it, not you, a different friend. And I thought, that's weird. Nobody says that. Now, you've said the exact same thing, so...
Wind is the... Windy's stormy days are, like... there's just, like, an epicness to them, you know? Like, whenever there's, like... Like, I'm, like, not religious at all. Like, I'm very much a skeptic. I'm very, like, grounded in, like, materialism and shit. But whenever, like, there's a big, windy, stormy day, I'm, like... I feel like there's some sort of higher power, you know?
Well, okay, so they're living by the water like I do. There's something to be said for a stormy day, right? There's a gorgeous... look of the water, right? What is it is in turmoil, and you have the wind, and you have the squalls and such. I get that, but I think it was more living out in the country that I would like go out on my bike, and I would hate having to bike into the wind. I didn't like and it always meant too. If I wanted as a kid, it meant like we would have a badminton set, or we would have a pool, like an above ground pool, right? Like something like that. And it was like those were like the days, like oh no, the wind is up again. And so I think I just always associated that sound with a type of weather that I just disliked. And like tonight, for instance, I went for a run before this podcast, and I was so happy because the last few runs I've been on were just windy as fuck, right? They were like running into a wall, it felt like. And tonight was so calm.
But isn't that just like sort of like epic, you know? Like you're like running, and it's like there's like all this power, and it's like
it kicks me around because I'm not a very large person, and so I sort of like so I just sort of,
oh my god, I'm imagining the wind just like picking you up.
It's
like
what it feels like, yeah. Because we have like these little alleyways where I run, and they just like funnel through them, like boom, I'm off to the other side of the sidewalk. And so, but today was so calm down by the water.
What, Debbie, do you have, wait, when that happens, can you not just, like, turn around and, like, run, like, with the wind at your back?
Well, I have a 5K course that I do. So that way I can do it like up to...
Can you not run it in the other direction?
Well, no, it has both directions. So yes, I do directions. Benefit from it at some point, yes. Okay. But the part where you're running into it is just like... but yeah, today was totally calm and I had this great time. I felt great. And I was like, oh my God, this is so wonderful. I even liked it so much that I went and I walked the route afterwards. And I was playing Pokemon Go, if I'm being honest, too. And and then my hands were like frozen by the end of it because it got cooler as the night went on. But yeah, so I think that is probably an association thing there. But I am happy that you love, I don't understand why you do, but I am happy that you love wind chimes.
It's just part of the sort of like the auditory landscape of like home. Like, you know, there's the wind chimes and then there's the wind blowing through the trees and then there's like the bird song. And then on foggy days, you might hear like a foghorn. Like it's like, if you're like, when you're by the river, like I fucking love foghorns. Yes. They're like one of my favorite sounds. So there's just like, it's like part of, or like the crackling fire, you know, like being from Michigan, it's just part of like the auditory, like natural landscape. Right. That's just like, I have like a positive mental association.
Yeah, it is very interesting to have that sort of, because we could talk about this forever because I love this kind of stuff. But yeah, it is interesting how sound does have an effect on people, right? Like it can have a very interesting effect on people. For instance, I love when I'm riding on the Washington State ferries to the San Juan Islands, probably because I love where I'm going, but also because there's a certain sound that the ferries have that's like tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick, right?
Yes, I love ferries.
Yeah, so I love the sound of it. And every time that I will turn on my dryer at home, it has this sort of similar tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick. And it actually will help me like almost like relax and go to sleep because I love this sound of the like what sounds like the ferry going, and it's my dryer. But you mentioned the foghorn. I remember being down in Bodega, California, and of course, right down on, you know, the bay there, you hear the foghorn all night long. And some people are like, I don't want to stay at this hotel because you hear the foghorn. I'm like, I love the foghorn. I thought it was the most awesome sound. And another thing that you remind me of with that is that the Seattle NHL team that's coming in, they were trying to decide what their goal celebration sound would be. And now they've pretty much picked it out as being the fairy horn. And they play this clip of like showing the fan, like potential fans and like the potential arena, whatever. And then they play the I didn't do it very good, but you know, but that's I was just like, oh my God, like, I got chills.
Back home in Michigan, my family, well, the side of my family that doesn't talk to us anymore, but they had a cabin or a cottage on Sugar Island, which is this like little island in the St. Mary's River on the border between the United States and Canada. Yeah. And you have to like take a ferry to get to the island.
Right.
And like that sound, like it's that exact sound. Oh, it just brings like so many memories.
Yeah, I know. No, it is. Some of those things are so great. But you brought up the fire as well. That's an interesting one because I have a lot of friends who love, I don't mind the sound of it, but who love the smell of a campfire. Now,
I love the smell,
hate it.
Campfire smells good.
I hate it.
Really?
Yeah, somebody who like basically spent most of my life outdoors, really, in all honesty, and yet I hate the smell of a campfire. I'll wash my clothes immediately when I get home. I don't like to sit near it. I hate the smell of it so much, which is weird because so many people love bonfires and stuff, but I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the other stuff, you know, you do mention there's this interesting feeling of, you mentioned the kind of electric feeling in the air. In the summer here, we'll get these really, like, hot, you know, summer days, right? But it's usually humid or it's, you know, and it comes, like, out of nowhere in Washington because it's, like, we get it for, like, a week or whatever. And then you'll have the first rain. It's, like, this warm rain. And you can just feel, like, the energy buzzing in the air. And it is a crazy feeling. You're right. It is a great feeling. But, yeah. So that's what you have. But, like I said, my mom, she likes the wind chimes, obviously. I didn't really know she liked them as much as she did until today on Twitter. My brother and his sister-in-law, or his sister-in-law, my sister-in-law, his wife, they have some wind chimes out in front of their, on their like patio. I don't know, it's not even a patio, it's like a stoop. They have them. I can't take it. That's why like the one thing I love about apartment living is that like, I don't think we're allowed to have wind chimes here. So nobody has. But anyways.
I mean, I would never put like a wind chime up if I was like in an apartment area with like a lot of people like right around me, like, but if I was like living in the country or if I was living even like in the suburbs where like there's like distance between houses, like I would totally do that.
It definitely does take you to a more peaceful area, I will say that, because it's something you hear in the more rural even country areas, and so it does take you back to that. I do agree with that. Well, Aiden, it's been fun. Thank you for always having a great conversation with me here. And yeah, so everybody, make sure that you keep tuning in through February. I know that our scheduling is a bit sporadic lately, but we'll definitely be talking about the debates, even if we probably don't want to. And we will talk about them. And yeah, and everybody, make sure that, you know, you go out there, and if you're living in one of those states, there's a primary or a caucus coming up, make sure you participate. And
vote for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, obviously pick Bernie. but yeah.
And also follow me on Twitter for more hot wind chime tweets.
Yes,
twitter.com/AIDANWOULD.
And you can find that in the description, my Twitter as well. And you know, everybody, just stay dope.
Stay dope.